Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, this is Graham. Welcome to a classic big interview. This time, we go back to season 16-17. This is what I had to say about it back then.
The excellence of John Collins' ability and his career was perfectly emblemised by his pretty dramatic move from Celtic to Monaco in 1996. During his own time in French football, John underwent something of a technical and tactical revolution and found that that was well within his capability, well within his locker. But his marginal gains approach to self-improvement had started way back in his teens, and he explains it. How else would a skinny kid from Gala Shields get the opportunity to line up alongside George Best in only his second professional game? He tells a wonderful story about how he simply couldn't believe that was going to happen. We talk about rugby, sweeper keepers and their use, their meaning in the modern game. Plus, of course, that iconic cheeky wink to camera before Scotland-Brazil, the opening game of the 1998 World Cup in France. Did you think it was to you? He'll tell you why it wasn't. This is a player who was ahead of his time in many ways during his own career. And sadly, because the game has slipped backwards, I think he's still very far ahead of the thinking of most people in modern football, certainly in modern football development. He shouldn't be out of the game. His views should be listened to and applied. And if anybody's got any sense, they'll employ him very soon. How much I enjoyed talking to John Collins for the big interview.
Never mind all the pressure and money. Football is entertainment. And the people you've talked about there are the guys you'd pay the daft ticket prices to go and watch.
Well, and I think that's what the fans deserve. And I think for English football to go again and start winning Champions League, they've got to get better at that. And I want to see a centre-half going out the full-back area, looking to fake it up, play it up the line, pull it inside with a Cruyff turn, play it into the central mid. For me, that's top-quality defender. Yeah. A defender who wins it, keeps it. No wins it and kicks up the part and gives it back to the opposition, clears line. The real quality is winning it, keeping it.
Who could do that? Well, Beckenbauer could do it. Did he have a career? Was he quite famous? Who could do that? Oh, Sammer could do that. Did he have a bit of a career? Lothar Matthäus. How did he go in his career? They all did that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like Stones is just risking his... That drives me absolutely bonkers. And he's not there yet. His decision-making and his capacity to learn...
He's got to do things quicker. He's got to make quicker decisions. Get the ball and acquire it quicker.
Yeah.
Get it, give it quicker. Yeah. Just now he's a little bit... Can be a little bit slow. He's hesitating
process,
a little bit.
Isn't it?
But he's learning.
It's yeah,
again,
process.
He's on the right track. I just hope the English media, but he's lucky, he's got the right manager. The right manager that's going to encourage him to take it all day long.
He's a pep type player. He's won the lottery there. Let's change the piece a little bit. The keeper, we've talked about keepers. I mean, Fabien Barthez was a footballer. He came and was quite a character in English football. What was it like playing with Barthez at the back? Because I need to point out that your time at Monaco was fabulous. Title, late stage semi-final of the UEFA Cup, semi-final of the Champions League as well. It was an elite group. Starting at the back, Fabien Barthez.
Barthez was a good football player again with his feet. A small goalkeeper, but he had a terrific spring. He could jump very high and he had great confidence. He was one of those guys that never stressed, just cool, calm, came to training. He was always in his jeans, torn jeans and a T-shirt, dead relaxed. And he was a happy guy. On the training pitch, a terrific attitude. Didn't like most goalkeepers, didn't like conceding. But he was a footballing goalkeeper. Again, that's what I liked about him. He passed it, had a terrific left foot, pinged it, And I was no surprise when he got a big move to Manchester as well. Did he do well at Manchester? I think he did. Had a decent career at Manchester. Wasn't probably the standard of Edwin van der Sar, but he was a good goalkeeper. And I go into my right back, Sanyol.
Well, he's a tough guy.
Good football player, and a great career at Bayern Munich. But again, he was a technically gifted football player. He was so confident in the ball, liked to get forward. Manu Petit.
Just a joy to watch.
In my Monaco team, he was often played. Sometimes he played centre half, sometimes he played left back, sometimes he played central mid. But he was more often in the back line than he was in midfield. But he went on to Arsenal.
Nearly to Rangers. Waltersmith came down to.
That's right. I think that was a year before. Yeah. Before I went, Rangers were sniffing and interested in him. A good all round football player. Did the simple things very well. Nice left foot. Won tackles and kept the ball. Had a terrific career.
We sat with Michael Carrick in this series and we were asking him to describe. I don't know why, because he was talking about liking the battles with Arsenal. We was talking about Petit and he said he had this technique of he'd win it, turn, see a space. He said he'd play a little golf shot with his left foot to set over Mars, backspin on the ball, over whoever's coming out, over Mars bombing through. Just did this lovely distribution.
Terrific left foot. It's a good description. He chipped it with a backspin. He was always comfortable on it. And his left foot. It was all left foot. Again, fairly quiet lad. Just got on with his work. No surprise that he went on to have a terrific career. Actually, went to Barcelona, didn't he? I forget about that.
He did. I don't know why it didn't quite work. And the series of Arsenal players, maybe until Henri, who'd come and promised the world and didn't click. It's a funny club. It was in transition at the time. Yeah. They didn't have a philosophy. I think they were buying stars rather than buying bits of a jigsaw, which didn't help the players. But it was an odd one, and I was so excited when he came, because that 98 World Cup winning team, I thought he was underrated in it. A brilliant athlete, and okay, Vieira wasn't in your team, but the two of them together, I think you'd have hated, well, you might have loved, but geez, what an afternoon you'd have had if you were playing against Vieira.
I played against that team when I was at Fulham or Everton, and it was a terrific Arsenal team with Petit in it. It was a big, powerful team as well as skillful. And kind of after that generation, it went to Barcelona, kind of took over, and it was the smaller players.
Yeah.
So you went from the big boys. Pires was 6 foot and skillful, petite,
super.
Thierry Henry, Bergkamp. So he had a lot of talent. Overmars, lightning quick.
You had one that bridged, because was Grimaldi not with you at
That's
Monaco?
Right. After my first year, Grimaldi and Petit both went to Arsenal. Sonny Anderson left and went to Barcelona. So a lot of people were thinking, oh, that's the Monaco team broken up, they're going to struggle the second year. We never won the league the second year, but we managed to win the league the first year, which got us into the Champions League. We did well in the Champions League semi-final.
Those were epic games. Do you remember that Juventus side you played against?
Yeah, it was a top Juventus
side. Lippi, Zidane, Davids,
Deschamps,
Didier, but was maybe even, no, I wonder if it was Peruzzi, not Van der Sar, and goals.
We gave them a run for their money.
Beat them in Louis Deux, didn't you?
We got beat. I was suspended for the first game. I got booked a couple of times against Manchester United, so I missed the first leg in Turin. And we took a, I think it was 4-1, you have to check. 4-2, or 3-1. But at Stade Louis Deux, we got back to within one goal. Yeah. I remember it was pouring rain, the pitch wasn't great, but we gave him a fright.
Were you playing opposite? Was that Zidane?
Zidane was in my zone, so he was a great.
What was the approach to trying to compete with Zidane?
Well, Zidane, you've got to try and get tight to him. Listen, when the ball arrives, you've got to try and arrive when the ball arrives, because if he gets control of the ball and then turns and faces you, he's got such quick feet and great vision, then you're going to struggle. So when I was playing against, kind of arrive at him when the ball arrives. But he was probably the best I played against.
Best ever? You're strong, but when I see him now, like, see, go to press conferences, whatever, and it often strikes me about very good players, because you see them from a distance, you forget their size, and they come up next year. Ronaldinho was the same. Zidane's a big old athlete, big old unit.
Well, he's a good size, Zidane.
Had strength, or?
Strength, but his biggest asset was his balance and his ball control and his vision. Great skill, right foot, left foot. He was just an outstanding football player.
Is there ever a time in a football game, when you're a lover of football, Is there any other temptation that you're playing the greats? I know your job is to close and get there. Can you be drawn into watching the opposition?
No, I think...
Never, ever?
No, you try and avoid that. I think when you're playing against great players and great teams, I think the last thing you want to do is show them too much respect. You've got to try and think they're not... The mindset's got to be they're not as good as they think they are or people think they are. That was always my take on it when I was playing against top players. Never always worked. You often got beat against them, but I think if you give them too much time and think they're better than they actually are, they just destroy you.
Don't feed their confidence at any cost. It's about 2004, I was down in Monte Carlo after your old team beat Chelsea, Claudio Ranieri's side. And it was a big night because Chelsea had been leading. It looked perfect. Ranieri changed things. Monaco got late goals, 3-1. They won on the final. And that night in the town, there was this fella up on a table in the bar dancing with two beautiful women. Royal fella. The prince. Up on a table giving it, oh, you beauty. Prince Rainier's son, Grace Kelly's boy. I know you know him very well. I've interviewed him before. Sportsman.
Yeah.
Olympic sportsman. His days are gone now, but what was it like with the old, did you get on with the prince?
Yeah, but he was very attached to the football team, and people often surprised when I say this. He used to regularly come down to the dressing room before the game and after the game, wishing us all the very best. He was travelled to away games in Europe every time. He was always in the stands supporting us. He'd be up at the training ground watching training. No, he took a big part in the club for a number of years. Obviously his father was still alive when we won the title, and we had a wonderful party in the Café de Paris. Him and his father was there, so great memories. But it's changed days now, unfortunately, at Monaco. He's taken a bit of a back. He's still at the games, but the new Russian majority shareholders are in now. So.
But the Prince wanted you back, didn't he, in 2009?
I was very close to going back in 2009, yep.
At his bidding?
How did you know that?
He told me.
All right, it's interesting. Yeah, long story short, I went to Charleroi.
No. This is the place for long stories, John.
All right, okay. Here we go. People often say, well, why did you go to Charleroi? So I went to Charleroi in Belgium in December. And really, it was to test, see if I could coach in French, work on my French. They were sitting in a relegation battle, so I went across, had a look, and I thought, why not? A challenge, I'll sign a contract to the end of the season and see how I get on. Took my assistant, Tommy Craig. So we went in after it was close season, well, the winter break, so we had a training camp in Turkey, assessed the squad, and felt we needed a couple of players. Managed to get, two good players and a young centre half from Monaco. For €75,000, and a midfielder called Adlin Ghidorah from Courtrai, and a free transfer, and both of them did a great job for the team. Cut a long story short, we started well, and we finished, and we pulled away from relegation zone. But
job done.
After just before the transfer window closed, went to training. There was a Brazilian central defender on the training pitch. A lot of trialists came and went. That was the way the club was. I've no problem with that. I actually enjoy trialists coming to the training pitch to have a look at them. Came in after training, sat down with the staff, because I kept a lot of the French staff, and says, how long is the Belgian here for on trial? And they all looked at me and says, he's signed. The president signed him. So I was three weeks in the job, and the president had signed a player. So I had a choice to make. I'd left Hibs after not a long time, 14 months in the job. What do I do here, 3 weeks into the job? Do I go home, or do I see it through to the end of the season? So I made my mind up, I'll see it through to the end of the season, but at the end of the season I won't be staying. That's not the rules that I work by. If I'm the manager, then I've got to make decisions on who comes and who goes. Certainly got to be a discussion had before we sign a player. But the Brazilian was a good kid, but he never played for me. So towards the end of that, a month before the end of the season, I got a phone call from Monaco. Would you come and talk? One of the directors would like you to come and talk to us about maybe taking over at the end of the season, start of the next season. So we played Standard Liège on this Saturday night, which was a big derby for Charleroi, and beat them. So Sunday morning I got the flight from Brussels to Nice, went to meet the president, one of the the directors, and Prince Albert was there, and we spoke about would I be interested in taking the job, and I said yep, definitely be interested. Obviously my contract finishes in 4 weeks time, so we shoot and says okay, that's great, look forward to taking the discussions forward. We never talked money. Unfortunately, I went back to Monaco. They hired a director of football, French,
Mark Keller,
right. Director of football, and he wanted a French manager, which at the time was bitterly disappointing for me. I'd shook with the president and one of the directors, and I lost out on the job. And Monaco, the manager they took on, ended up
a disaster, they got relegated. Didn't work, yeah.
They ended up getting relegated, but my opportunity kind of went, and it kind of sickened me for a while. I left Charleroi after thinking I was getting the Monaco job. I had other offers, but not quite the same quality team as Monaco, and I never went back in for a while.
Football does that to people often. I think it can be a treacherous sport.
Yeah, it can, but I think there's probably lots of managers and coaches out there who have been in similar situations. They've talked to clubs and think it's nearly done, nearly over the line, and it happens, so happens that it doesn't get done or get concluded. But it was close.
Damn shame.
And it was exciting times, but it never happened. That's life.
Oh God. Well, listen, maybe learn your Russian, speak to the owner, let's see, maybe get this back on. How far was your house, or how far were you from a younger man, maybe a couple of years, Gregor Townsend?
Gregor was from my hometown.
Aye.
Yep, Gala Shields. He was like the same year as my brother, maybe 1 or 2 years younger than me. But again, growing up, I was kind of doing well on the football side in the town, and Gregor was the one that everybody was talking about as an up and coming rugby player. And I played rugby at school, first and second year. So when I watch rugby, I've got enough idea what's happening in a game, who's a good player. But when I watched him as a young, even all through his career, Gregor was a fantastic rugby player, intelligent, skillful, strong. And he went down the same route as me. He went to France and learned, probably a lot over in France in preparation, and he's turned out to be a fantastic coach. The job he's done at Glasgow is incredible. And
he's the player that would draw you to the game, because he would take risks and do clever things, intelligent things that other people couldn't see.
I've got a really interesting, last season we had the Leinster, the Irish rugby team, were playing Glasgow, and they came up to the training ground to watch our training and ask questions
at Lennoxton.
Yeah, so I says to their coaches, I says, tell me, how does Gregor coach and how does his teams play? He says, probably the best description, biggest compliment I can give him, they play rugby like Barcelona play football. And I thought, wow, if that is not the biggest and best compliment that you could be handed to a young Scottish rugby coach, I thought, wow. But I was surprised that they say that quite such a great coach, but I'm so happy for Gregor. But tells you what he's done and the mark he's made in his sport, because people think of rugby being all about power, strength, but Gregor's brought movement, intelligence, people playing with their heart, their brain, their legs together. So it's nice to hear.
As a player, he was an Iniesta rugby player, I think, in terms of the flow, the movement, the spaces that he saw, ideas that he had.
Again, it's just like a central midfield player. Your head's constantly moving right, left, scanning your shoulder. I use the word scanning when I'm teaching players. Top players scan constantly. Their head's looking right, left, all the time. And that's what Gregor was. He's constantly looking for opportunities. Where do I pass it? Where do I burst? Where do I sprint through? Where's the gaps? And from that point of view, there's similarities.
did Scotland miss a great out half, a great
nah,
scrum?
I was always better at football or rugby. I was okay at rugby, but football was always my main sport.
What is it about the place that you two grew up in that conditioned both of you to be so competitive, so hungry to learn, so European, both of you? What's Borders life?
Well, Borders life, in those days, when I was down there, there wasn't a lot else to do except sport. Sport was a big part at school, after school. We never had Sky television, we never had 50 channels, we never had PlayStation, Game Boys, Xboxes. We had the scheme, friends, a ball, bits of grass, and that was enough to spend all our time developing our talents and playing a game that we loved. He was playing rugby, I was playing football. And I'm sure his story's the same. He played with bigger, stronger, better players, and he was constantly trying to get better and listening. Listening's a great... Listening and watching. How do you get better? So...
Was there a tougher mentality down there?
I don't know if there was a tougher mentality.
I think that's a cliche.
I mean, it's tough life in the city centre, in Glasgow, in the cities. But it's a lovely little town in the Galway Shields. In those days, it was mainly a rugby town. But in recent years, the football's probably caught up. There's as many, if not more, kids playing football in Galway Shields now than rugby, which is nice from the football point of view.
Now, I wouldn't be allowed home by Mrs. H if I didn't ask you, why did you wink at the camera?
Everybody asks me that question, and I'll tell you the story.
Sorry.
My wife was at the game, my father was at the game, my two girls, young little 2 and 4 year olds, were with granny, and I promised them, watch dad on the telly and I'll give you a nice big wink on the television. So that's who the wink was for, the two girls.
Did you have any idea about what might be happening in the sort of football female population of what seems like the fucking world?
No, the next day everybody was saying, who are you winking to, what were you winking for? Looked like you were showing off and trying to be cool.
That's not what people say to me. My mum, who's 79, oh, he's so good looking. Nah, it's John Collins' sex symbol.
Trust me, it wasn't to the ladies, it was to my two little princesses who were sitting with their granny.
Lucky girls. Was Scotland a good adventure for you? I think there must be some regrets because you were part of our last good group and maybe a qualification from a group stage was within our grasp.
Yeah.
No?
Yeah, I think 98 we were disappointed not to qualify. When the group was drawn, Morocco, Norway and Brazil, we felt we could get that second place. And I still think we should have. I think we had the players to get it.
What went wrong?
I think again Norway we should have won. We were the better team against Norway, 1-1. Brazil, we were never expected to beat them, but we put up a great show.
And there was nothing left of the game.
And there was not a lot in it. We gave a really good account of ourselves. In the last game, we had to go for it. Morocco, we needed a win in the last game.
Did the red card condition things a bit?
What time was it? You tell me.
I'd say it was at 1-0, I think.
I haven't looked back in the game. I'm not one for looking back and
really
analysing defeats and bad moments. Probably should have, and you'll probably learn from your defeats more than you do from your victories. But my recollection of the game was we were pushing. They scored the goal. We were pushing for an equaliser. They counter-attacked us again. And again, 2-0, we had to go for it. And again, they broke. But there was regrets, we never qualified, bitter disappointment. But when you look back now, we'd love to be in that position now, wouldn't we? Getting to tournaments and being part of the main event, the Tartan Army. No matter what anybody says, the Tartan Army brighten up the World Cups.
There's a big smile on your face now as you say it. It's true.
Because my greatest memory of Scotland is going to the Stade de France, sitting on the bus from the hotel to the stadium. It was a long way. And just seeing Scotland fans at the side of the roads all the way, nearly scarves, and then you get closer to the stadium, and it just the numbers build up, and the yellow strip, the Brazilians singing and dancing with the Scottish fans, bagpipes. I think, wow! It was memorable, and then going obviously the stadium, and lining up before the game, playing against the mighty Brazil, Ronaldo, and who else was it? Rivaldo. Roberto Carlos, Cafu,
Beto,
So there was a lot of quality in that team. But, you know, we were organised, we were disciplined under Craig, and we were hard to beat. But we never played with fear. And I think that was one of the things. We just went. We had a go.
What character in your group, I think?
Yeah, I think when you look back now with Tom Boyd and Burley, Henry, myself and Lambo, middle of the park, we were comfortable on the ball. Darren Jackson played. Gordon, was Gordon Dury playing?
We'd have been about that time.
We had good legs at the top of the pitch as well. I mean, Kevin Gallagher, sharp, chased everything. So we gave it everything. And it'd be nice if in the future we get back.
This passion for the Tartan Army and for a style of football, I don't know what your... I mean, I guess one of your objectives would be a Monaco-style situation where a club that you like and trust, a club with a character that wants to play football, that says, yes, we like, and an owner that believes in you. I guess that's one of your maybe career goals. But at some stage in the future, Scotland manager, does that fulfil you? Or?
I think the Scotland manager at this moment in time is a tough job. Would it? Yeah, I don't think you'd ask any Scottish ex-player, a Scottish person, would you turn down the national job? I don't think you'd ever turn it down. But at this moment in time, it's not something that I'm thinking about.
No. I'm not. Certainly not talking about now or Gordon's position at all. Just like while you were talking, this isn't a visual medium.
Yeah.
There was a big grin, a big sort of happy. Yeah. Well, grin
it was a happy period in my life being part of the national squad. I mean, I went in Italia 90, that was my first event. I was in the squad. I never made the starting 11 or the bench, but it actually frustrated me being there. Mm. But it stoked the fire. I wanted to get in that team and get back to a World Cup. So being part of it, international matches, packed Hamdens, getting to finals, getting to European Championships, it's a pinnacle for any player. The pinnacle is standing in that middle of that turf at Hamden, facing the main stand, your father, your mother, your friends in there watching it, the national anthem blasting out. It doesn't get any better than that. It doesn't get any higher than that. No matter what anybody says, nothing beats that feeling. You're picked for your country, number one. All the football players, you're representing your country. It's a great feeling. Certainly was for me. And I had it for maybe a 10-year period near enough, which is a long time. And at the time, obviously, media and fans expected, wanted more of us when we got to the finals. But when you look back now, we did not too bad.
There's no question about that whatsoever. Listen, it's possibly... before we finish, we started the last with Stylian Petrov and golf. Let's maybe finish yours. And how's your golf?
Golf's... the handicap should be better, 11.9, but I'm playing to about 8 or 9 just now. I'm really enjoying it. I enjoy the golf. I live on a golf course over here in East Lothian, beautiful part of Scotland. A little bit cooler just now for the golf, but... it's a sport I enjoy. It's competitive, and I've got lots of good friends here I play with and have challenges.
What's your favourite club? When you reach for the bag, what are you happiest pulling out of that bag?
A 60-degree loft wedge at the moment.
Just putting it in.
Just chipping it in. Just getting it chipping just over the bunkers, 60, 50 yard chips. Enjoying that just now. If you'd asked me that 2 years ago, it was the worst club in my bag, but I've worked a little bit out the last year or so.
There's a way to finish. There's a John Collins theme. Listen, for people we will stop on this. What's your advice? Because you've Dave Brailsford and cycling always talks about marginal gains.
Yeah.
The intensity of your desire to better yourself and to show others that they can do it too. That's a defining trait of every conversation I've ever had with you. What how do you encapsulate that for somebody who's listening to this now and thinking, well, I don't know if I can do it, I don't know if I can achieve it, I don't know if I've got enough? What do you explain from your experience about how to improve yourself, succeed?
Well, my experience, I always go back to when I was 15. I went up to Dundee United on a trial with a great manager, Jim McLean, and they were probably the best team for developing young players at that time. So I went up on trial. And I was still playing for Hutchison Vale in Edinburgh at the time. Three of my teammates had signed to go full time there, so I was hoping to be the fourth. So I went in the week's trial, and the feedback was, no, you've not quite got it. We'll keep an eye on you. So in those days, there was no mobile phones, so I was driving home, getting the bus home from Dundee to Gala Shields. A long, lonely journey home, and going back to school the next day to tell my buddies that I'll be staying on at school, I've been knocked back. But on that journey home, I thought, I'm going to prove him wrong. He said I was too small, maybe a little bit weak. So that was in November. Middle of December, I got a phone call from Hibs to come in on a trial, Pat Stanton at Hibs. I had a week's training, and it was with the first team. And I think I did well. I was just 9 stone, little kid for Gala, up training with the... And at the end of the week, Pat came in and says, phone your dad, I'd like your dad to come up tomorrow and have a chat. My dad came up, and Pat Stanton says to my dad, we're going to offer him a 2-year apprenticeship, and I can promise you, Mr. Collins, age means nothing to me. When John's good enough, ready, he'll be in the team. And I signed, I left school in January, just before my 15th, my 16th birthday. 31st of January is my birthday. So I went full time. Started getting the bus up for Gala Shields at 7 o'clock in the morning, getting home at 7 at night, and running from St Andrews bus station down to Easter Road, back up to get the bus home. And I continued playing for my boys' club for the 6 months. I played for the reserves on the Wednesday night, trained every day like a beast. I was in the gym trying to build my 9 stone frame up. So season finished. Never forget, my dad says, you don't stop training, you're going back pre-season to be fittest at that training ground. So I trained all close season, came back for pre-season. All the first team boys are telling me, hey, slow down, stay in the group, who you try to show. And then my dad says, don't ever stick with a group, push away from them, don't be happy with their standards, set your own. Washing the stands Friday night, first pre-season friendly match of the season, Manchester City against Hibs. I'm cleaning the seats with Paul Kane, Mickey Weir up the stand because they've been all dusty throughout the summer, wiping the seats down. Shout for Pat Stanton with cigars, hey, come down to my office. And the manager, I'd just been at the club for 6 months playing my boys club. He took me into his office, he smoked his cigar. He says, is your dad coming to the game tonight? I says, no, my dad only comes to watch me and he's a Celtic supporter. He says, oh, is that right, son? Looked at me with kind of a little smile on his face. He says, you better phone him and tell him to come because you're going to play tonight. And I left his office, went back up to clean the seats, and the boys, I thought he was joking. The boy says, what did the manager say? He says I'm playing tonight. I'm like, eh? I said, I don't know if he was joking. I went back down and asked him, and he says, you're playing tonight, phone your dad.
Seriously, not Mr. Stanton, is it true?
I couldn't believe it. And sure enough, it was true to his word. A manager, nothing to do with age, trained well, he seen something in me, put me in the team. That was Friday night, did fairly well, wide left, played Jackie McNamara's testimonial on the Sunday, 2 days later against Newcastle United, Beardsley and all them, and George Best was guesting for Hibs. So my second game, who am I sitting next to in the dressing room getting changed? The legend George Best, he's playing inside left, I'm playing outside left, getting passes from him, playing 1-2s, and I'm like, wow, it was like a dream come true. But I wasn't ready for the first team, I was just a little, tiny little lad. But Pat Stanton was a smart guy. That whole the season started, I never played in the first team, I went back to the reserves, and the following season I was in the first team, debut at Aberdeen, Pittodrie, and we lost a few late goals, unlucky. But a manager, again, that's when I'm a manager, I love giving young players an opportunity, because for the grace of God, I might not have had the career I had if it wasn't for a brave manager saying, you know what? Because all the first team boys wanted to play against Manchester City. People think it's just a friendly, but the first game of the season, all the first team players wanted, and there's this little kid, Harley, had a training session with the first team in the first team. So Pat Stanton, I owe him so much on Hibs, of course, because that was my first club. But he fed me that little bit, and that drove me on. But it all came maybe from Jim McLean knocking me back and it's a great story to tell. Lots of, because young players get knockbacks. Life's about knockbacks all the time. Barriers all around you. You come to a barrier, what do? Somebody says you're not good enough, you say okay, or do you think, you know what, I'm going to prove him wrong, prove me right, I'm going to go round the barrier, over the bar, I'm going to find a way of doing it. And it's a message I tell all young players, it's not where you start, it's where you go, whether it's in the gym or out in shooting practice, how many you score at shooting with your right foot, left foot, how many free kicks you can put in the top corner, bottom corner, your numbers are important, and you've got to set yourself targets. Never be happy where you are, always try and get better and push yourself. And that's what I did for 19 years. I was fortunate. I had coaches that gave me a chance. I worked my socks off. I had very few injuries, which is a lot has got to do with good luck, good fortune, but also good preparation. I turned up for training having a good night's sleep and being ready and alert on the training pitch, so I never picked up many injuries in the training pitch. And it's all about preparation, putting the work in on the training pitch. And people talk about having the will to win in a match. The kicks off is important, it's very important, but what is absolutely vital is the training. What you do is vital. If you don't do the proper training during the week, you don't get the performance on the Saturday. So that's where we've got to get into players' mind, because in Scotland I see the game's kicked off and everybody's running about giving 100%, running, chasing, but they've got to do that training Monday to Friday, morning, afternoon, how they're sleeping, eating. They've got to get that into the mindset. How can we get better at every single aspect? You talked about the cycling. It's true. How do they get better with the right foot, left foot, control, speed, endurance, stronger core, direct free kicks. It's about details and about pushing the boundary. But it all comes back down to, again, is quality coaching. Players don't grow on trees. They're developed. They're developed with good coaches and good habits on the training pitch. That's my belief.
Then the sooner that knowledge, that passion, that ability to develop is back somewhere, hopefully in Scottish football, the better forever is the recipient of your attitude and knowledge. Privilege. A pleasure, as expected. Thank you very much. What a great career.
My pleasure.